Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 2nd, 2016. We'll begin this portion of our reading with the obituaries. Kenneth Dale Lewis, 84, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, July 29th in Symphony of Decatur. Funeral service to celebrate Kenny's life will be 11 a.m. Thursday, August 4th in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday in the funeral home. Memorials are suggested to the American Heart Association. Marguerite McNeese, 98, of Shelbyville, Illinois, died at 8:19 a.m. Sunday, July 31st, in Shelbyville Manor. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 3rd, in Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois, with Gary Crowder and Sid Hutchinson officiating. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Tower Hill Cemetery, Tower Hill, Illinois. Memorials may be given to the Shelby County Senior Center or the Shelbyville First United Methodist Church Roof Fund. Lillian Jeanette Jean Moore, 98, of Decatur, passed from this earthly life on Friday, July 29th in Imbaden Creek Living Center. Mass of Christian burial will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 3rd in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church with Reverend Rick Welton as celebrant. Burial will follow in Calvary Cemetery in Iliopolis. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Danny K. Regal, 70, of Pisotum, passed away on Sunday morning, July 31st, at his residence. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, August 3rd, at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, August 2nd, at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Davis Memorial Cemetery, Pisotum, Illinois, with military graveside rights accorded. Memorials are suggested to Presence Rainbow Hospice or Arthur Southern Baptist Church. Dorothy Ann Skipper, 95, of Blue Mound, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, July 30th at Imbaden Creek Gardens after a battle with renal disease. A service to celebrate Dorothy's life will be held at 3 p.m. on Thursday, August 4th at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation 2 hours prior to services on Thursday. Dorothy will be laid to rest in Hall Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be directed to Blue Mound United Methodist Church Organ Fund or Blue Mound Memorial Library. Jeffrey Scott Tokars, 43, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, July 31st, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, August 4th, 2016, at St. Patrick Catholic Church, 407 East El Dorado Street. Reverend John Burnett, celebrant. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, August 3rd at Moran and Gerbel Funeral Home with a vigil prayer service at 4:30 p.m. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials are suggested to St. Patrick School. Boyd E. Trimble, 82, of Blue Mound, passed away on Sunday, July 31st at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A service to celebrate Boyd's life will be held at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday, August 4th at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday. The family requests casual attire for Boyd's services. Boyd will be laid to rest in Hall Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial contributions be sent to American Cancer Society or Special Olympics. We turn back to page 3 now for news of crime and courts with this headline: Parolee faces charges for allegedly shooting pregnant woman with BB gun. This was written by Huey Freeman. James T. Reed, a 27-year-old Decatur parolee, was arraigned Monday on 5 felony counts for allegedly battering a pregnant woman and shooting her with a BB gun. He is being held in the Macon County Jail on $30,000 bond with orders to have no contact with the victim. Reed, who was released from prison March 1st, was arrested Wednesday after the victim told police that he grabbed her by the hair, forcibly threw her to the ground, and punched her once in the side of her stomach. And that was from an affidavit by Decatur Patrol Officer Chad Loudon. After the victim was able to flee from the scene, Reed, quote, picked up a large brick and threw it through her living room window, shattering the double pane window, Loudon wrote in his statement. Officers noted that the 21-year-old woman had several injuries to both legs and her left arm, quote, which appeared to be previous injuries sustained from being shot with a BB. The victim said, quote, James became angry with her and shot her several times with a BB gun, causing the injuries. In his most recent domestic battery conviction, Reed punched the same victim in the face several times on February 17, 2014, after Reed grabbed the keys to a van that didn't belong to him. An officer noted in an affidavit that the victim, then 19, appeared to have been struck with great force, with her face swollen. Reed served 70 days in jail and part of a conditional discharge term before that case was dismissed as part of a plea deal in June 2015. Reed is due in court for his preliminary hearing in his most recent case on August 10th. We'll turn now to some of our favorite columnists to look at what they're reading about and talking about today. The first is a letter to Abby. Dear Abby, I am an attractive 30-year-old woman just out of a 5-year relationship. I am starting to date again, but I have a complication. I cannot have children. I am wondering when the right time to bring this up with the men I meet would be. After a few dates seems too soon. However, the men usually reveal their desire for a family during this time. What is the rule of thumb here? Signed, Single in San Francisco. Dear Single, the rule of thumb is honesty is the best policy. If someone tells you he wants a family, it would be dishonest not to tell him then that you won't be able to have children. However, if nothing is mentioned before, when you are becoming intimate and the subject of birth control is raised, would be a logical time to speak up. In the next letter, dear Abby, I live in a city. Many of my friends live in the suburbs within commuting distance. Several of them commute daily, and there are many mass transit options running throughout the night. On a few occasions, we have planned an outing in the city, and after the tickets are purchased, one of them, Carla, has casually stated, "I may need to spend the night at your house, since it'll be late when we get back." Abby, Carla knows the schedule of mass transit and knows what we've planned. How do I respond when she invites herself to spend the night? I have the room, but it's still a hassle having someone stay overnight. Signed, City Girl with Country Friends. Dear City Girl, assuming this is becoming a pattern with Carla, the time to bring this up is before you buy the tickets. The words to use are, "I would prefer that you don't stay over because I'm really not comfortable having overnight guests." And if she continues to suggest she wants to stay with you, stop inviting her to nighttime events. And one more letter. Dear Abby, I find that I get asked too often why I haven't bought a house yet. I'm 42, single, and have a master's degree. But like lots of other people, I had to go into debt to get it. I'm not complaining about that. What bugs me is the invasive question I don't feel I should have to answer, usually asked by people whose parents help them to buy a house. I don't come from a rich family, and it feels like people are flaunting their privilege when they ask me. Duh, I don't have $20,000 for a down payment. But I shouldn't have to say that. How can I respond to this question while not being rude or actually answering it? Better yet, how do I respond in such a way that people stop asking? And this is signed In Debt in Illinois. Dear In Debt, this reply should do the trick. There are many reasons why, and it's complicated. When and if I do decide to buy, I'll let you know. Oh, here's one more letter. My daughter and I disagree about whether it's all right to hold the door open when the air conditioning is running on high to keep the house cool. She'll hold the door open while standing in the doorway talking to her friends who drive up in a car. In the meantime, I am paying for the AC to run full blast. Please give us some guidance. Dear Mom, and oh, that was signed Anonymous Mom in Raleigh. Dear Mom, I'll try. Rather than venture into the physics of how air conditioners work, may I suggest that because your daughter lives with you and you are paying the bills, she should have enough respect for you to do as you ask. Dr. Roach has an interesting question asked of him. Dear Dr. Roach, last year at age 76, I developed extreme pain in my shoulders, both wrists, and even leg joints following a surgery. I was diagnosed with shoulder arthritis. It felt like every movement caused pain. I got injections and could barely drive. Finally, it was controlled with prednisone and a senior gym class, but not completely. I experienced real muscle pain and stiffness, sleep difficulty, and depression over the year that it took to get maybe 70% mobile again. I couldn't tolerate much gym exercise, no pain-free walks, nor did I have much joint range of motion even after a year. I finally consulted a health store last month for a remedy trying to better pain relief and flexibility. Two managers recommended the latest concentrated creatine supplement. I followed their directions and with about 3 weeks was back on my bike, walking more, and noticed more muscle tone developing, a big increase in my range of pain-free motion, and less fatigue. Seniors exercise classes are way more fun when you don't hurt all over. I have had no side effects, but carefully worked up to my current regimen, and I watch for any changes that affect my ability to stay well. Now, 40 days later, I feel better and am tearing out the old deck to replace boards. And here is Dr. Roach's answer. The sudden onset of shoulder pain in someone in their 70s, relieved by prednisone, makes me wonder if your original problem might have been polymyalgia rheumatica, an inflammatory condition with marked shoulder pain and stiffness that's particularly bad in the morning. It is treated with prednisone and requires a year or two of treatment. Nevertheless, your dramatic response to creatine is not something I have heard before. I've written about creatine as a supplement to help build muscle and strength, particularly in young men, but have done additional research and have found some evidence that creatine can be helpful in osteoarthritis, and it can improve strength in older people as well. It's possible that the increased strength and decreased pain allowed you to do more exercise, which is well known to improve function. I did find reports of people getting muscle and joint pains from taking creatine, but at a low dose, around 5 grams a day, it is generally considered safe. Here's another letter. Dear Dr. Roach, for many years, my sister has been taking over-the-counter and prescription laxatives almost daily. Is this another practice to control weight? She is in her 80s and she weighs the same as she did in her 20s. Is this as addictive as anorexia and bulimia? If so, why is this not well known? What are the dangers of this practice? And the answer is this. Laxatives may be abused for several reasons, but it is so frequently the case in some eating disorders that laxative abuse is specifically mentioned in the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for bulimia nervosa. I see it frequently as a clinician. It's not an addiction in the classical sense, but it is a behavior that is difficult or impossible for the person to control without help. I assure you that the physicians know this phenomenon well and know the dangers of this practice. The GI tract regulates water and, to some extent, electrolyte balance. So volume depletion, high or low sodium levels, low blood pressure, and kidney damage all are possible complications. On page 6, we find this article about Millikan University. Millikan University taps one of its own for key development posts. Gina Bianchi isn't someone who will ask you to do something she isn't willing to do. That's why she said yes to a new job she started Monday as Millikan University's interim vice president for alumni and development, replacing the long-serving Dave Brandon. I encourage everyone to come back to campus, volunteer your time, write that check, said Bianchi, 44. I'm pleased to be able to offer my services. I'm all about giving back. A 1993 graduate of Millikan, who majored in communication and public relations, Bianchi served as senior director of alumni and donor engagement under Brandon from August 2013 until her father passed away last summer and she left the position to settle his estate in Granville. She lives in Normal. Bianchi previously worked for 17 years at ISU, where she earned a master's degree in athletic administration in 1999. She spent some of her time there as director of ISU's annual fund, director of development for the Division of Student Affairs, and for the last 6 years served as director of alumni relations. Millikan President Patrick White said the university is fortunate to have Bianchi during this important period of transition. Quote, "She brings proven leadership and management skills, fundraising experience in several key areas, and great love of Millikan to this vital role," White said. Brandon, who has been named an associate in the Trust and Wealth Management Group of Hickory Point Bank, started work in Millikan's Alumni and Development Department in 1997 and was promoted in September 2012 to Vice President. White said the university appreciates his many years of fundraising success, including heading up the conclusion of the Transform MU Capital campaign, which surpassed its $85 million goal by $10.7 million. The campaign made possible construction of the University Commons at Staley Library, now underway, and other campus improvements. Dave has long been an important connection to Millikan for many alumni and friends, and he has left a lasting mark on the university, White said. A search for new vice president for alumni and development is underway. On the opinions page, we find a feature column that was taken from the Chicago Tribune, and the headline is "Ice Bucket Challenge Paid Off." They don't call summer the silly season for nothing. This often carefree time of year is prone to odd crazes that somehow don't seem to pop up in the depths of winter. Right now, it's Pokemon Go. A few summers ago, it was Carly Rae Jepsen's pop hit, Call Me Maybe, which inspired lip-synced videos by everyone from the Miami Dolphins cheerleaders to the Harvard baseball team. But there may have been no odd fad more improbable than the one 2 years ago that spurred millions of people to record videos of themselves dumping buckets of ice water over their heads. Anyone tagged by a friend had a choice: either take an Arctic shower or donate money to the ALS Association to fight amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, the deadly disease nicknamed after baseball legend Lou Gehrig. In practice, most of those who were challenged did both, and then challenged their friends in a daisy chain of goofy self-abasement. Elected officials and athletes did it. Maybe you did as well. All the goofiness paid off. By the time the fad passed, ALS groups around the world had been flooded with $220 million. Quote, "In just 8 weeks, the U.S. ALS Association, ALSA, received 13 times as much in contributions as what it had made in the whole of the preceding year," reports James Surowiecki in The New Yorker. The Les Turner ALS Foundation saw donations skyrocket. What's more, ALSA has seen contributions stay well above the previous level, and the surge apparently didn't divert funds from other charitable organizations. The campaign educated people about a progressive illness that destroys the neurons controlling muscle movements. Victims are robbed of their ability to move, speak, and eventually breathe. It's fatal, and there is no cure. Raising money for such a grave need is good, but seeing that money put to productive use is even better. ALSA now says the funds paid for research that detected a gene that is partly responsible for the disease, opening up new avenues for devising ways to treat the disease. What happened? Quote, the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge enabled the ALS Association to invest in Project MEN-E's work to create large biorepositories of ALS biosamples that are designed to allow exactly this kind of research and to produce exactly this kind of result, says the group. Eventually, all this research and data may lead to a cure. Using the power of social media to stimulate awareness of a deadly scourge, mobilize efforts to tackle it, and see those efforts lead to concrete results, it's enough to give you a warm feeling, not to mention a reason to give again. No ice bucket is required. Take a quick look at the Decatur Tribune online to find out what Paul Osborne is saying in his column, City Beat. This one is headlined, People, Places, and Public Spaces. The flowers that adorn the area surrounding the public library building in the 100 block of North Franklin Street are great to see and enjoy as I walk by them heading to the post office every day. I stopped and shot a photo, he's showing one here, of one of the concrete planters, which was full of beauty one morning last week. That's only one small part of all the flowers that adorn the area in stark contrast with all of the concrete. I know a lot of work goes into that effort, and if those responsible are working in the area someday when you're walking by, stop and thank them for their efforts. Beautiful flowers not only help make downtown beautiful, but they also make my day when I see them. It's worth a trip downtown just to see the beautiful results of a lot of hard work. And that's been the case for many years with the gardens. Great job. Thank you. Returning now to the Herald Review, there is the sad article from Lincoln. Two children were killed and a third seriously injured Sunday afternoon after a semi-truck crashed into a line of cars on Interstate 55 in Logan County. The dead children, ages 2 and 4, and the injured child reported to be in critical condition at OSF St. Francis Medical Center in Bloomington were passengers in a van driven by David Rock, 40, of Chicago. Illinois State Police said a semi driven by Taven Webster, 24, of Purcell, Missouri, struck the van about 3 p.m., causing it to hit an SUV driven by Gwendolyn Pfizer, 35, of Lansing, causing the SUV to hit a car driven by Jeffrey Phelan, 48, of Shorewood, causing the car to hit a pickup truck driven by Chad Stoner, 43, of Manhattan. At least one other person was injured badly enough to be airlifted from the scene. State police said charges may follow further investigation. This has been Carol Bond with the August 2nd edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I look forward to reading with you again next week.